I'm walking. Yeah, the need and I'm talking. By you and me, I'm hoping that you come back to me.
Wendy, if it's okay with you, I would like to pay a very respectful tribute to the great Fats Domino, who died earlier this morning at the age of 89. Love Fats Domino.
I'm covered in goosebumps right now. I mean, I'm not kidding. And it's not cold in here. I loved him. I have to be honest with you, didn't know he was still alive.
That's crazy. You just mentioned that to me a little while ago, and you weren't the only person in the room who said that. Several people said, that's very sad about Fats Domino, but we thought he was already gone, because he hadn't really made many public appearances of late. I can't remember the last time I saw him anywhere.
So that's interesting. Do you feel bad that he's died, even though you thought he already had?
Is it easier or harder?
It's the same. It's just a shame. He was, what, 89?
Ain't that a shame?
89.
My tears fell like rain.
89, the same age, by the way, as the great Robert Guillaume, who died yesterday at the age of 89. So the 89 Club, people always talk about the 27 Club. Uh-uh, it's the 89 Club.
I'd rather belong to the 89 Club if you want to know
way
the truth.
Way better. Martin Landau, who died earlier this year, he was also 89. Something's going on. Something crazy's going on.
There was also a 69 Club, because that was David Bowie. Yeah.
That's a whole different entrance exam.
Yeah, that's right. It is. Now, Mike Jacobson, who produces for Steve Cochran's show, as you had said, I thought Fats Domino had already died, and other people thought the same. Mike Jacobson said these words. I didn't even know who he was. That's sad.
Super
sad.
How
do you not know who Fats Domino is?
Jasmine Cooper is our producer. How old are you, Jasmine? You don't have to answer. Am I not allowed to ask that question?
If you're 89, stay inside all day today.
I'm going to be 28 tomorrow.
Congratulations.
Oh, thank
Congrats.
You.
Good. I'm glad I asked because we have to get something together by tomorrow.
One day delivery.
Yep. thank you, Amazon. Right.
Bing. Jasmine is prime. Yep. I'll tell you that. Yep. Did you know who Fats Domino was?
I did.
It's hard not
but
to know.
But Jasmine has incredible taste in not just the music of today, but a lot of times I'll come into the office and she'll be playing. What were you playing? Was it yesterday or Monday, Jazz? You were playing some song from
all
the 70s.
Old school R&B music.
Yeah. So Jasmine has this incredible appreciation. She does have an old ear. It's weird.
You should go to an ear, nose, and throat guy.
Yeah. You should get that looked
Maybe
at.
Maybe they can do plastic surgery on it or something.
I don't know
because
what
is
happened.
It really giant? Because you notice when people get older, their ears.
They get bigger.
One
How does
is
that
bigger
happen?
Than the other, so.
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
One's always bigger than the other.
If you're just tuning in, this is our salute to Fats Domino. Great Fats Domino died earlier today at the age of 89. You know, not just a great singer. We played a clip. Can you play? Do you still have that handy, Jasmine? Listen to his voice. I mean, he's known, of course, for his incredible voice, but did you ever see him play the piano?
Oh, yeah, baby.
Wow. Wow. He was one of those guys, and if I played the piano, I would want to be like this. I don't know how to play, but if I did, he doesn't just sit and play the piano. He's like all over the place. He's just
Jerry
like,
Lee
no matter
Lewis.
What, Jerry Lee Lewis could do that. There's a lot of guys who could do that. Listen to how great he is.
He can make it sound like a sax.
Yes.
Yeah, he's that good.
Yes.
You just like it because on happy days they found their thrill. Well,
it's Sax Wednesdays, by the way.
I was going to say, who introduced you? And it was happy days for me, kind of.
Because Richie's theme song was Blueberry Hill. Right. Richie Cunningham would always sing, I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
I knew of him before that.
I did too. But to a lot of people, that was probably their intro to the music of Fats Domino. Now, can anyone confirm this for me? Because I had heard this a lot when I was a kid, and I never looked it up. I should probably look it up. But I always heard that Chubby Checker was named Chubby Checker, not in real life. He had a regular name, a birth name. But the music company that he worked for named him Chubby Checker in answer to Fats Domino. Because when you look at it, Fats and Chubby are similar.
That makes total sense.
Domino and Checker.
I mean, they were all about scams back in the day, right? Or all about marketing things that way.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense.
Ernest Evans was Chubby Checker's real name.
I don't know if it'll confirm or deny that, but the story I always heard was somebody, one of the record promoters or some head of the agency that he worked for, the music company, said, well, Fats Domino is just cleaning up right now. We need our own version of Fats Domino. So they found him and named him Chubby Checker in answer to the name Fats Domino.
All right, Fats Domino had 22 million selling singles.
Wow. Wow.
That is shocking to me.
That's amazing.
110 million records sold.
That's incredible. I hope he died a wealthy man. You know, because a lot of times you hear stories
about
this.
You know what? I bet he didn't.
And they die in poverty, and I hope that's not the case. I hope he had a bunch of cash.
Because I don't know, you know, they didn't pay as much back then, and royalties, they probably didn't have a great contract.
Not only did they not pay royalties and stuff like that, but they always kind of swindled these guys because the music industry was so new. So they would, you know, they'd sell millions and millions and millions of records, but pay them, you know, a penny per every hundred or something like that.
Hey, buddy, we're going to change your name to Chubby Checker and charge you $500.
Right. Is that fair? All right, where do I sign? I would love to sign that deal.
According to seniorforums.com, because I'm old now.
Yeah. Is that your homepage?
After school, Ernest Evans, Chubby to be.
Yeah.
Would entertain customers at various jobs, including Fresh Farm Poultry on 9th Street. And he'd do songs and tell some jokes. And his bosses at the produce market, his boss Tony A., gave Evans the nickname Chubby. I don't know why, but he did. And then
he was not what you would call chubby. I don't think he was chubby, right?
Not really. And then he was on American Bandstand with Dick Clark. It was at this recording session that Evans got his stage name from Clark's wife, who asked Evans what his name was. Well, he replied, "My friends call me Chubby," even though his name was Ernest Evans, as he had just completed a Fats Domino impression.
Oh.
She smiled and said, "As in checker?" That little play on words, chubby meaning fat, checkers like dominoes.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Oh, how about
According
that?
To this, Dick Clark's wife gave him the name.
How about that?
How about that?
How about that?
Fats Domino.
Okay, get this story. I just was reading. Fats Domino during Hurricane Katrina, because that's the other thing about him is he was, a New Orleans sound.
Yeah.
He stayed with it.
Born there and lived there forever, didn't
so
he?
So his wife was very ill when Hurricane Katrina was moving through. He chose to stay in his house, which was in a heavily flooded area. Someone thought he was dead, and they spray-painted a message on his home, R.I.P. Fats, you'll be missed forever. And then CNN later reported he had been rescued by the Coast Guard.
How about that? That's incredible.
Antoine Dominique Domino Jr. That's his real name.
That's his real name? So the only person, it turns out, in the early days of rock and roll in the 1950s that sold more records than him... than Fats Domino was Elvis Presley. That was the only person that sold more records. He sold over 65 million records.
Good golly, Miss Molly.
That's a bunch. So that's why when a guy like Mike Jacobson, the producer of the Steve Cochran Show, says, I don't know who that is, I get sad because you go, that guy meant a lot to the world of music. And what happens where names are just forgotten like that? That should never be the case.
And Jacobson is in radio.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I guess he likes sports more, but...
Yeah.
It's very disappointing, frankly.
It's very disappointing.
He's a fine young man.
Yeah, well, I used to agree with you, Steve. Yeah. I don't know that I do anymore.
I'm just getting a text from my 18-year-old son on all caps. Fats Domino died?
Mm-hmm.
Very sorry to break it to you, Michael.
Yep. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. It's Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Will you stroll with me, please?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just hearing the news for the first time, I hate to be the one to break it to you.
How can you talk over that?
I can't talk
Richie
over
Cunningham would have bopped you.
He would have.
He would have bopped you
He was not
one.
A violent man, Richie Cunningham.
No.
Very even keeled. Fats Domino, the voice you hear in the back, trying to be heard over mine, died earlier this morning at the age of 89. As did Robert Guillaume yesterday, died at the age of 89. As did Roger Moore earlier this year at the age of 89. So did Martin Landau this year at the age of 89. Jimmy Stewart was 89 when he died. So was B.B. King, Lauren Bacall, Carl Sandburg, Joey Bishop.
Well, it's a pretty common death age.
I guess. I'm still looking into
it,
Steve.
Like
I don't believe in it.
No, because I believe you can hold on.
What was Jimmy?
Jimmy Stewart?
No.
Because you can hold on, and how could 89 be common? You'd think you'd hit the cusp. You'd go, oh, if I could just hold on for a few more days, 90. That would be
if
more common.
More
what
days,
was the Jimi Hendrix age, right? There were a number.
27.
Janis Joplin.
27.
Okay,
Jim Morrison.
That's interesting. 89.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I still think something's mysterious. I don't like it. I'm looking into it. I'm going to do a full investigation. I really am. Now, can I tell you something about Robert Guillaume? I read his bio yesterday, and some of it I already knew. He came from some very tough beginnings, you know?
Didn't know who his
dad was. His mom was a prostitute. He grew up in a very, very rough area in St. Louis.
Poor Benson.
Yeah. And actually, he tells the story, and I had heard this story before. When he was a stage actor, he did Broadway shows when he got offered the role of Benson on Soap originally.
Great show.
He didn't want to take it because he said, I really feel like we're advancing, and here I'd be on network TV playing a character, serving people, and I don't want to go backwards. I want to go forwards. And then they said to him, read it again. Read the script again. You'll notice that Benson does this in a very snarky, negative
way.
Big
time.
And he did. He pulled it off. He was great. He won a couple Emmys for playing Benson, both one on Soap and one on Benson. But here's where I know him from. When I was in grade school, remember how they would show those film strips all the time that were really hokey? Sometimes they were about manners, those kind of things. All right, so the company that we had at our school at St. Damien had the same troupe of actors in all of those really awful film strips. And a young Robert Guillaume was in all those. And it was just when Soap was hitting. So whatever message they were trying to get across in these films were lost on us because we kept saying, Benson wouldn't say that. Benson wouldn't do that. We were like way above that. Benson doesn't care what we do after school. He's Benson. He doesn't care. So it was just a waste of our time. A waste of everybody's time.
Okay, wasn't he in Roots as well?
I don't remember him in Roots.
I think he was.
Was he?
Let me look him up.
As Benson,
I think
Steve?
I remember the character name, but I don't want to say if I'm totally wrong. I'm looking it up.
He was great in Birdman.
He was in Birdman.
Steve, I don't think he was in Birdman either.
What?
I don't think...
I'm confusing him with Ben Vereen.
Yeah, Ben Vereen was Chicken George
Roots. Yeah.
I got to tell you something. I heard Dean Richards on the Steve Cochran Morning Show today, and I had forgotten that Benson was a spinoff from Soap. I totally remember him on Soap, but I kind of forgot it was a spinoff.
It was odd that they gave that character a spinoff because when he was on Soap, he had very little screen time. They would just bring him in. He would do a funny line.
But
and
it was
he's
quality.
Done. Yeah. Oh, always. Always. But there were other characters on Soap that were way, way, way more prominent that you'd think if we're going to spin off a character, we would do that guy or her or that guy. But his character was just so... I don't want to say likable, but memorable, you know, because he went against the grain so well. But so the arc of his character in just a couple short seasons from Soap to Benson was he was kind of the head servant there for the family on Soap. And then he became like the lieutenant governor, right?
Right. That's
not a bad couple of years.
I never really
see,
watched
that's progress.
Benson.
That's huge progress. That's gigantic progress.
He has a lot of credits to his resume.
And let us not forget his work in Lion King, where he was Rafiki.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
He had his own TV series.
Sports Night.
No, the Robert Guillaume Show.
Oh, I don't remember that at all.
So that was in 1989.
A variety show?
I don't really know. I don't remember that. I only remember him on Soap, and I got to be honest with you, I never really watched Benson.
It's pretty funny. It was the first network job of a comedian you may know, Jerry Seinfeld.
Really?
Yeah. He was on a season of Benson.
Robert Guillaume Show was not a variety show, which the title makes you think that.
Sure.
It was, at the time, 1989, the only American series whose plot revolves around the growing romantic relationship between an African-American man and Caucasian woman.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't either. Wendy Phillips, I don't know who that is. That's who was his wife.
Nope, don't remember it.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all.
And it was a network show. It wasn't syndicated?
I don't know.
It doesn't say?
I don't know where it was, Bill. Right. But he had a lot of work, and he
was
on Saved by the Bell. The Love Boat, yes.
Yeah, all guest starring roles. Yeah.
The Jeffersons, All in the Family.
Yeah.
Marcus Welby, remember that show?
Sure, of course.
Stephen Kiley, MD. And Consuelo.
Yeah.
My mom looked like Consuelo. Everybody.
Did she?
Yeah. Consuelo everybody
Lopez?
Used to call her that. Yeah.
Elena Verdugo.
Yeah.
See how he does that.
I know a couple things, Steve. Yeah. I can't help it. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. Hello, everybody. I need to set something up here.
Please.
I may owe you something.
Well, you do. I don't know what it is, but I know you do owe me something. And I would appreciate it if you started paying it off immediately.
I don't know if you remember a while ago, I believe it was last year when the Cubs were approaching the World Series playoffs,
yeah,
and you fell in love with one Jake Arrieta.
Yeah.
And you wrote this song.
Oh, Arrieta, Jacob Arrieta, Arrieta, he's my favorite Cub. Almost pitched a perfect game, destined for the Hall of Fame. Freeze the frame, shout his name. Perfect game, Hall of Fame.
Oh,
I remember that.
All right, we can stop it now.
Billboard named it Song of the Year, remember?
Right. Well, you know, then I fell in love with Mitch Trubisky, who is the new quarterback of the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
And I searched high and low for the perfect melody and couldn't come up with the right melody or lyrics,
yeah,
to write this ode to Mitch Trubisky.
Mitch Trubisky, I like Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky, he's my favorite Bear. Not afraid to pass the ball. When he runs, he'll sometimes fall, pass the ball. Oak Brook Mall, better call Saul. Oh.
And it took me so long to come up with that particular melody.
It seems similar. They seem very similar.
Well, now Phil Thompson in the Chicago Tribune has written an article, What's With All the Mitch Trubisky Tribute Songs?
Oh.
And there's a little paragraph in here. I sectioned it off if you'd like to read it.
Yeah, I'd love to read it. This is from Phil Thompson of the Tribune. He says, Wendy Snyder of WGN's Bill and Wendy Show is another songmaker, borrowing the melody of French-Canadian children's song Alouette in her rendition on Monday. She sings Mitch Trubisky, I like Mitch Trubisky, Mitch Trubisky, he's my favorite Bear, not afraid to pass the ball. When he runs, he sometimes falls, pass the ball, Oak Brook Mall, better call Saul.
And then Matt Spiegel on another station.
Yeah, I know Matt Spiegel.
Matt Spiegel's co-host, Danny Parkins, said, I'm sure their song is great, but we have been doing the Mitch album for a while.
Mitch album?
The Mitch LP.
Oh.
The Mitch collection.
The sports writer.
Mitch album is a famous sports
writer. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Or writer,
yeah,
too.
So Matt Spiegel sings on four of the five Trubisky tribute songs. And, you know, no one else can do it like we can, basically. So I've started a war.
The Arrieta song was featured in the newspaper, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in a couple of papers in Time and Newsweek and something. And it was in overseas. They did a lot of stuff with
it. BBC, I think.
BBC did a special, a two-hour documentary.
I feel kind of guilty.
Well,
it's press for our show.
It's press for the show, but it's bad blood is what it is. You've got me mad at you. You've got other radio personalities mad at you. Is it worth it?
I just did it to make fun of you, basically.
you'd have to wait in line if that was your goal. It's a tribute, of course. But you know what I did is when I wrote mine, I went to the guys who originally wrote Alouette and said, is it cool with you guys if I have some fun with it? And they said, yeah, go at it. Have at it.
You think Fats Domino was old?
I think he might have killed Fats Domino.
Don't say that.
Those people were not around who wrote.
Don't say that.
I think Frère Jacques wrote Alouette.
Frère Jacques is not a writer, songwriter? Come on.
Well, I feel like I owe you royalties
or
something.
You do owe me royalties.
So we'll,
I already talked to the law offices of Belkin and Doran. We're coming after you.
Will $2.71
yeah,
cut
that's
it?
Fine.
All right.
I'll sell for that.
All right. Well, thanks for the inspiration. You inspire me every day.
Well,
you make me want to be a better man.
Thanks.
Hi, Joan.
Yeah, hi, guys. You know, I don't know about you, Wendy, but I know Bill is a big Cubs guy.
Mm-hmm.
What made the Cubs better when they beat the Dodgers? Because the Dodgers look unbeatable.
Well, they didn't beat the Dodgers. You know that. Spoiler
they did
alert.
Two games.
They did one game.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, one game.
Yeah.
Oh,
just the
okay.
one game. But the difference
yeah,
may have been Jake Arrieta.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I watched this yesterday, and I thought, I can't believe that the Astros are good, but against these guys, I don't know.
Yeah, they're really playing good. I think, what have they won, 8 out of their 9 games in the postseason?
Something like
they're pretty
that.
Good.
Kershaw was on fire, and Justin Turner.
I know.
That
he doesn't.
Guy, that bugs me, that redhead. He's got hair all over his face.
Like a crazy lawn gnome, isn't he?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I see him. I don't know what he looks like without the hair, but right now he looks like a red monster coming out, you know, flying around, whatever.
Boston has the green monster, and Los Angeles has the red monster.
He doesn't look like he'd be a great baseball player.
No.
He doesn't, and he delivers.
Yeah, Yeah.
I wish there was some kind of saying, you got to do something with those beards. They're just, I don't know. Some are nicely trimmed, but some look like Bushmen.
Yep.
I mean, it's disgusting looking.
Yep.
I just wanted to know what I didn't know they only played one game with the Cubs. I'm a latecomer.
No, that's all right. Don't feel bad, Joan. And we're with you on the Bears, but I think they keep their beards long because they think we could probably hide the football in our beard and get away. Nobody will know we've got the ball.
And those red locks, that's another thing. Oh, God.
You don't like those either.
Nice talking to you guys.
Thank you, Joan. Take care of yourself. That was Joan.
I love Joan.
Yeah, she's good. A quick baseball note, if I may. Yesterday, we told you the sad, sad story about a little girl, a cancer patient, who had a picture of Anthony Rizzo stolen from her hospital room. This is a horrible, horrible story. An autographed picture of Anthony Rizzo that she cherished. A caller has already texted, and I already knew this, but I want to reiterate it. Anthony Rizzo came to her rescue and sent out not only another autographed picture, but also a jersey and some game tickets for next season.
I knew it.
So, yeah.
We knew it.
What a class guy. That's so nice of him to do.
And 815 said that Justin Turner looks like a crazy leprechaun.
He does. He does.
And, you know.
Did you ever see the movie Leprechaun?
You're right. He's Justin a little taller.
Turner. Yeah.
And, you know, caller Joan mentioned the red locks, or some people call them dreadlocks, of the football players. Can you grab that if you're trying to tackle them?
I don't think so.
Because that's what I would do all the time.
Just yank at their beard, knock
them down? No, the dreadlocks.
Oh, the hair?
Yeah, because that's part of the uniform then. If it's coming down over their shoulder pads.
It just seems wrong to pull a guy's hair in an NFL game. I don't know if that would be, would that be recognized as a good way to bring a guy down?
I guess not.
Pulled his hair and got
I would
him
do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break, then a lot more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is our call in and our text line. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. You know, Christmas is 2 months away, right?
It's that quick.
Yeah, it's 2 months away.
Jeez.
So yesterday, the spokesperson for Target, a man named Rick Gomez, who serves as Target's chief marketing officer, made an announcement. He said in the past, over at Target, they have decorated for Christmas, and some people say it's too early, and this year they're not going to do that. They're not going to rush Christmas like they've done in the past. They're going to listen to what their shoppers have said, and they're going to be more mindful of the fact that it's one holiday at a time. It's Halloween, then it's Thanksgiving, and then it's Christmas. So don't worry, they've learned from what they've done in the past. Only one problem, the stores are already decorated for Christmas.
They've been decorated for Christmas.
For several weeks.
Yeah.
I know. Target says it's taking a stand against Christmas, noting that customers want more emphasis on Thanksgiving before it's time to get jolly with the mistletoe and the holly. They want us to pause and be really intentional and recognize Thanksgiving, said Rick Gomez, who I mentioned is their chief marketing officer.
Chief.
What they don't want us to do is go for Christmas right away, so we're going to respect that. But then they point out, as I pointed out, that many of the stores are already decorated for Christmas.
They have to, though. I was just at Hobby Lobby, and they have a Christmas section. So
yeah.
They clear it out, and they've had stuff up for the last month.
Yeah, yeah.
They have a certain area, so that's where they fill it up.
But they figured out years and years and years ago that just by seeing these things, if you're shopping and you see Christmas things, you go, you know, I'm here. The stuff is up. I might as well take a look. And if you take a look, you're going to see something you like.
Right.
It's not a bad move, but people do complain.
Well, everybody complains about everything. If you don't want Christmas stuff because it's too early,
don't
walk down that aisle.
Go down a different aisle. Now, also, this is interesting. They just put out a notice. Now, I was under the impression that this had already happened, but they said that this year, analysts are saying at Deloitte & Touche, they're saying,
you've got a nice touche.
Wendy, that's the kind of behavior I'm writing you up for. They say that this will be the first year ever that consumers in the United States spend more money online for Christmas presents. They expect this year that 51% of the sales for Christmas presents and goods will be online and 42% will be in physical stores. It's the first time that it's ever happened where more money is spent online than in stores.
I'm shocked at it.
Didn't you think it's been that way for a few years?
It's so convenient. I mean, I do both.
Yeah.
I like to physically touch and look at things, but I got to be honest with you, the return policies are so great.
online.
Yeah, and even if you, like I ordered, I need new silverware because I don't know who keeps throwing away forks, but I'm losing them. Yeah. I don't know if they're on a paper plate and they toss the paper plate with the fork. So I ordered some online at Kohl's. It was online only. And I got them, and I looked at them, and they were too thin. I kept dropping them.
Oh, yeah.
Brought them right back. No questions asked. I can bring it back to the store.
Right.
Kohl's still getting the money for
sure,
it.
Of
it's
course.
Just online's way easier.
But don't you miss, like, part of the season itself is just going out, and I know people go, yeah, but it's long lines and stuff, but it's not long lines anymore.
No, because everybody's
so
online.
So it's actually not bad. That's what gets me in the mood, you know, is being out and buying stuff physically. I do almost none of it online, very little.
You are like an old Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Honestly, thank you. I just envision you putting your winter coat on and a nice little fluffy snow, and let's go shopping. And, you know,
I go with Barbara Stanwyck every year we go Christmas shopping.
Do you stop for a hot toddy?
Yeah, hot toddy. Yep.
But that's what I envision you doing, like, oh, the festive spirit.
It just means so much more to me. Like, you could do it online, but it doesn't feel like that.
There's
just
no feeling.
Like, no. I like to physically go out, and I know it can be crowded and hot, and you're walking around a shopping center, and you're all sweaty and stuff, but I don't know. It feels like the holiday that way.
It does. Christmas has lost its feel to me.
Oh.
I mean, I still love it, but
you're going to be visited by three ghosts.
Bring them on.
Fats Domino, Robert Guillaume, and the Bears playoff chances. They're all going to visit you.
In our family, if the goal is to have a list put together by Thanksgiving. So you pass out your lists.
Yeah.
The kids have it tough. I say this jokingly. Because they have to give a list to Jim's parents, a list to my family, and then a list for us.
Separate lists. There's no crossover.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to imagine being a kid, it's hard to come up with three lists of things
sure.
you want.
Right.
So, but we go off a list, so there's no feeling anymore.
Do they give the higher priced items to you and Jim or to the grandparents?
It depends.
You could sway them very easily.
Sometimes they want things that are very expensive that we all have to pitch in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then you feel guilty because it's like, well, you're just going to have one present. But think about it. When you were a kid and there was something you really wanted, wouldn't you have rather had that one thing you really wanted instead of like opening
a bunch of little things you don't want?
Yeah, like socks, underwear.
Yeah. Yep. You're going to get those anyway.
Yeah, that's a good
point. Somebody's going to get you those. Here's a quick question because I'm doing the math on this. If this year, if consumers are spending 51% of their purchases online and 42% in stores, that comes to 93%. How are they getting the other 7% of their gifts?
That would be shoplifting.
Stealing them? Yeah. All right. No. That's easier. Now it's Christmas. Now it feels like Christmas. All right. We'll take a quick break, some news, and then Dr. John Duffy joins us. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's WGN.
Thank you so much, Steve. Fats Domino, still no longer with us.
Keep us updated, Wendy, as the show progresses. Let us know what changes. John Duffy is here. Dr. John Duffy joins us every other Wednesday. And we talk about, how would you describe it, what we talk about, John? What's the best way to put it into words?
I like to think of it as the psychological issues of the day.
Yes,
is that fair?
Yeah, that's more than fair.
We're doing mental conditioning.
Yes, mental conditioning. I like that even better.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You can use that.
I'm going to borrow
it.
I
usually steal from Bill, and I can just give it to you then.
Fair enough.
All right. A lot of times, John, when we have you on, we talk about problems having to do with younger people, but not so much today, correct?
Right. Today, I thought we might talk about people like kind of middle age. I've been working with more and more people in their mid-40s, 50s, 60s, even 70s, who are experiencing some anxiety and depression because they feel like they kind of know the end of their story. Mm. And they feel like kind of stuck, like, oh, I'll make change in my life, but as long as I still have this mortgage or as long as the kids are still at home or, you know, as long as I'm not partner yet in the firm or whatever it is that's stopping them, they end up kind of sitting still in their lives. And that is depressing and anxiety provoking. And a lot of people are arguing, you know, like not only do I not feel like 60 is a new 50 or 50 is a new 40, I feel older than my years.
Oh.
All right. So that said, do you think it's a good idea to have a blueprint? A lot of people say when they reach a certain age, and it usually does happen on the zeros and the fives.
Right.
I'm 50 and I thought I'd be further along at 50 or at 55 or at 60. Are you a believer that you should make that blueprint and try to map out where you'll be at a certain point in your life?
What I prefer is that to take wherever you are in your life and think about what you can do to reinvent the parts of your life that are pliable, that are open. So a lot of us, we do have to stay with the jobs that we're in, right? Because we do have kids that we're raising. We do have mortgages that we're paying. But what can you add to the mix? A few years ago, my wife was feeling some unrest and she decided to start painting. I had a client, and this is a great story. He was about 50 years old. He had never been an athlete in his entire life. He, you know, was in insurance. This was what he was. And he just felt like, well, I'm this overweight middle-aged guy. This is the end of my story. And one time he brought in running shoes and he put them on the desk between us. And he said, I don't know what to do with these things. I'm not an athlete. This is not how I define myself. And he decided, well, I'll take a walk around the block and just see how that feels. And then he started jogging around the block. And within a year, he ran a half marathon.
Look at you know? That.
Right. And he lost a bunch of weight. And he suddenly considers himself an athlete. This is a big part of his self-definition. And he would argue he feels not just 10 years old, younger. He feels 20 years younger.
Yeah,
you know?
Bet.
Yeah.
It's so, never too late, bottom line, correct?
It's never too late. And it's important to recognize I can write another chapter. I've got space here to write another chapter and I can start something new. So if I never considered myself an artist or an athlete or a runner or whatever, a musician, right?
I want to be a rock star. Is
you,
it
can
too
be,
late?
You can still not be a rock star, Wendy. I think it's not too late. Right.
Although, and Bill, I've heard you say this, and I know it from my in-laws and your father, as you get up in your age, sometimes my in-laws have said that they're kind of afraid to answer the phone because they don't know what one of their friends have passed away yet.
Yep.
So, I mean, the depression is coming anyway, so any diversion might be spectacular.
Absolutely. You know, I talked to my mother this morning, right? And normally when I talk to her, she has a report of somebody who's passed away.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
She's 87 years old, right?
God bless her.
And so in order to kind of keep herself vital and engaged and not depressed about the fact that her friends are passing away,
yeah.
She goes to the gym. She makes sure she gets out to the grocery store. And these little things are her next chapter. This is her kind of like, okay, I'm going to reinvent my late 80s so that I'm doing something different and something interesting to me instead
yeah.
of just sitting here doing a crossword puzzle waiting to die, waiting for time to pass.
Do you know, several times at the health club that I go to, there have been, this happened three different times that come to mind immediately. There's been an older person lifting weights or using a machine, and they apologize. They go, I'm sorry, I'm so slow. I know you want to get on the machine. And I say, oh, no, please. You don't know how inspiring this is for me to see you here working out. This is great that you're here working out. Take all the time you want.
And it really is, isn't it? You know, like I've had that same experience where, you know, I'll be running and I'll see a guy who's got 20 years on me who's
yeah.
keeping pace, you know, where I'm yeah. like, I better pick it up. Like, I'm really not even
right.
in the zone with this guy.
Yeah.
But it is inspiring, right? And you realize, oh, we really don't have to put the limits on these things that we do, right? So we tend to say we're athletes in our youth or we're going to be kind of experimenting and reinventing it in our youth. But we, as a generation, have the luxury,
yeah.
I think, of having some time to think about what else we might want to do with our lives and with our time instead of kind of just getting home, turning on the TV, or playing the video game,
right.
and then, you know, calling it a day.
But just clarify this for me, John, because yeah. I'm unclear. Is it okay to look at an age and say, at any point, I really thought, you know, in my process of where my timeline is, that I'm ahead of or behind schedule? Like, I'm doing this. I thought I would have accomplished more at this age or less at this age. Is it okay to do that or should you not do that?
I think we all do it, whether it's okay or not. You know, like, I think we have these demarcations in our lives and we picture, like, boy, I thought by this time I'd be here.
Yeah.
Or, well, I can't believe I'm here
yeah.
already at this point, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's a healthy thing to do to kind of have these, even if they're wholly arbitrary, these moments where we can say, okay, this isn't exactly where I wanted to be. Now, how do I regroup to
yeah.
get there by the next benchmark? You know
right.
what I mean? Like, so, but I think it's important. What I like about that method is you take stock, right? So it gives you this moment where you breathe and you say, okay, where am I? Where did I picture myself being? Mm-hmm. am I happy with where I am? And what Jerry rigging can I do to get where I want to be next time?
Yeah.
To play devil's advocate, though, if you set a goal for yourself and, you know, by 55, I am going to be a millionaire. My house is going to be spotless. And then it doesn't happen. I think that adds a lot of anxiety to your life. If you're going career-wise, you know, by 50, I am going to be in the career of my dreams, president of the company. What if you're not then?
Right.
Is it a failure?
No, it can't be, right? I mean, we have to be pliable about these things, right? Because oftentimes, the things we think we want when we're 40, by the time we get to 55, we realize, oh, that isn't what I wanted at all, right? So I'm going to have to shift that too, right? So it's not like the goal is a static goal or a set of goals. I think we have to be open to, like, you know, really opening that up and really thinking year to year to year, what is it I really want out of my life? And a lot of times we want peace of mind, right?
Yeah.
I want to just, all I want to do is I want to be able to relax, or I want to be able to enjoy my family more. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be these grand resume building goals. Sometimes it's just like, I want to put my phone down for another hour a day and just enjoy the people
right.
around me, you
right.
know?
You have to allow some wiggle room, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, definitely.
And I, as you were saying, you know, do something that you want, and your mother is in her 80s, upper
yeah,
80s.
Late 80s, 87.
God love her.
Yeah.
And she's doing things she wants. I was whining the other day, oh yeah, I want to take vocal lessons. I want to do this. And my younger son, Dylan, says, well, why don't you do it? And I said, I don't have time. And he said, then you must not want to do it, because if it's something you want to do, you'll make the time. And that's really true. Because
wow.
I was going to say, how do I, you know, what if you don't have time to do it? If it's something you want to do, you make time to play tennis how many times a week?
4 or 5 times a
See?
Week.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you want to do it.
Right. Dylan, the life coach, right? So it's
yeah.
kind of like, it is. It's a matter of prioritizing, right? So we protect time for the things that matter to us.
Sure.
Right?
That's
and
it.
We, and sense. That's what we have to reconsider every once in a while.
Dr. John Duffy's here, the author of The Available Parent. If you'd like to comment or question him, and why wouldn't you? People should line up with questions. Find out what he's saying.
Ask a question of him,
yeah,
not question
you do
him.
That too. 312-981-7200 if you want to do any of those things. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Dr. John Duffy's here. We're talking about expectations as you get older. We have a couple of calls. We have a couple of texts. Where should we start?
How about with Susie? Susie John Duffy on the phone. Dr. John Duffy.
Hi, Dr. Duffy.
Hi, Susie.
What do you do when you're, you know, at a certain age already? You know, I'm like 70, and I all of a sudden had an injury. I was pretty well-rounded, exercised. Rode my bike, played with my grandkids, was an artist. I mean, I'm retired from real estate and teaching and all that. And I'm an artist, and I was first diagnosed with essential tremor. All right, so I was dealing with that. Then I had a rotator cuff injury. Now I broke my arm with another injury in two places and my wrist. How do you come out of that? How do you redefine who you are and not be depressed?
Oh, I so get it, Susie. I can imagine, especially given what you do, how discouraging that must be and how it feels like, oh, great. Well, I'm this artist and the tools that I need to use on my body, they're not working. They're not cooperating, right, in the way I want them to. That's got to be
so difficult. Right, and I don't
so
know
difficult.
If I'll ever come back from this where my wrist is just a mess. I'm still in a brace right now. After I had the cast taken off, you know, my goal is, you know, I'll go to rehab and all that. But it's painful. I don't know how do you readjust and go on with the activities and, you know, all that. It's just, I don't know what to do, actually.
Well, I've got a couple of thoughts for you. One is, you know, to take it kind of day by day. You're 70, and 70 these days is not as old as it used to be. You're relatively young, and so you might be surprised with the physical therapy and the therapies that are available how your body can bounce back if you're pretty tenacious about taking care of it. You're also, I can tell, a creative person, right? So my bias would be to tap that creativity. If you find like, okay, I'm limited in this way, I'm used to painting, or I'm not sure what type of art you create. But think about other ways that you might create if your body is limited in some way. You know, like that would be the challenge I would throw out to you is like think about like how you can channel that creativity in a different way given what you're dealing with right now.
Maybe photography and, or something.
Right. Or writing or, you know, like, but somewhere in there, Susie, I am confident that there is hope for you. I so get how frustrating this must be. But if you can kind of shapeshift the way you look at it, and you've done this before, you're a creative person, then I think you can find a different way to express yourself and even do that until your body heals, if it's heading in that direction. Does that make sense?
Yes, it makes sense. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good luck to you, Susie.
Best of luck, Susie.
All right. It's always tough because somebody has a thing or two or three things that they really enjoy, and when they can't do them, I think a lot of the solid advice is we'll find something else, but it's sometimes
it's so hard
to find something.
And if you really can't do it, you have to be able to grieve the thing you've lost.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because it is really, really difficult, especially because I would guess that Susie defines herself in large part as an artist, right?
Yeah.
So if she finds out, well, this really isn't something I can do in the way I've been doing it, you know, there is something heartbreaking about that. And you've got to give yourself a moment, you know, to take that in and to recognize, okay, that chapter might be over before you start thinking about what that next chapter is going to look like. Yeah,
we don't have a lot of time, but let's try and get Scott's call in here. Scott, again, we're running out of time, but go ahead and your comment or question for Dr. John Duffy.
Yeah, my question was, my wife passed away last month. We were somewhat healthy until she died. What do you do then? You know, you have nothing to go for anymore. You know, we were married 33 years, and now what do I do?
Well, I have to say, Scott, you know, and I'm looking at Bill and Wendy here, and I think we all feel terribly for your loss.
Yep.
It sounds like it was somewhat sudden, and you're asking a completely reasonable question. You know, like, wow, what do I have to go on for? What, you know, I've lived my life with her, and I can tell you we're very much in love with her. So, you know, what happens next? And for now, my bias for you is that you get to grieve her. You know what I mean? And you get to think about your life together, and at least for some period of time, because if you push through that fast and you think about, like, okay, so I need to regroup and come up with another way to look at and to live my life, then you're going to be grieving for a longer period than you would otherwise. But even in days like this, you know, so it's a beautiful sunny day, and if you can get yourself out and just take a walk, or if you can listen to some music, even music that you listen to together, but something that will not necessarily lift your mood, but allow yourself to feel what you feel, then you'll find yourself kind of moving through the grief, and the answers to your question will come more organically than you might think right now in the midst of that loss, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, terribly sorry for your loss.
Scott, do you have children, grandchildren?
No, I've got my kids are all grown up.
I'll see that.
No grandkids.
Then you try and think of what else can you do, you know? It's a very tough time right now, but Dr. Duffy's right. It's like you have to get through. You have to grieve. You have to listen to that song and let yourself cry and move forward. We wish you all the best of luck. So sorry to hear this, Scott.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott. John, are you a proponent of doing a bucket list? Is that something you would advise for or against?
I don't mind a bucket list as long as, like we were talking about earlier, it's pliable.
Yeah.
Because something that's on a bucket list at 40, once you hit 55 or 60, you might feel like, you know what? I no longer care about jumping out of airplanes.
Right.
You know?
Although I just read online some 84 or 94-year-old woman just spent her birthday skydiving.
Yeah. Is that right?
She always wanted to do.
Amazing, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you're willing to shapeshift that a little bit, but I actually like that idea because I think it kind of moves us out of our comfort zone. And I've yet to sit across from a person who did something on their bucket list. I sat across from a woman recently, this week, who rappelled down a waterfall.
Oh, man.
Yes, about 120 feet.
Jeez.
She and you know, and she was anxious about leaving the house not that long ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this was part of her bucket list. She wanted to rappel down a mountain. She didn't realize there was going to be a waterfall that she was going to be in the midst of.
Yeah.
But really, really an impressive feat. And and she's really proud of it. And that became part of her bucket list.
Right.
And now, I think her bucket list is going to expand
to
more
I'm
of these
sure
risk-taking
of
things, you know, that she didn't anticipate were going to be on there.
Because once you knock one down, you go, well, if I could pull that off, I'm sure there's plenty of other things
absolutely
I could achieve. Sure.
How great is that?
Right?
Yeah.
And I'm worried because I don't have time to make jewelry. God.
But, you know, I give somebody like Kevin, our former producer, said to Wendy and myself at some point, he goes, you know, I just turned 30 and my wife's the same age. And we realized if we don't take a chance and do something with our lives and our careers, at some point, we may regret it later on.
Sure.
And I said, you can't argue with logic like that because we all have one or two of those things where you come to a crossroads and you go, if I don't try it now, I don't know if I ever will.
I think there's some truth to that, right?
Yeah.
And but the now can be just about any time.
Yeah.
I think that would add that you don't have to be 30 to have that
right
now.
Sure.
And to try it, you at least know I like it or I don't. If you don't try it, you never know.
Yeah.
And it's the not knowing what drives you nuts.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep. That's Dr. John Duffy. Listen to his podcast, read his book, stop by his house, do whatever you feel you need to do. He's there for you. Thank you, John. Appreciate
you
being here. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you so much, Kim. I want to say a special happy anniversary to my husband, Jimmy
Mann. Oh, is it his anniversary?
I believe it would be mine as well.
It's both of your anniversaries on the same day.
Yes, 20
anniversary. You usually wish me a happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to Kim Gordon.
We're switching roles.
Now, this is a special one.
This is our 20th.
Oh, that's a big deal.
You know, when we first got married, I thought, you know, it doesn't mean anything until you hit those double digits.
That's when it gets real.
And now it's two times the double digits.
Yeah.
So how fast those double digits come.
Absolutely. We had planned on going to St. Lucia for our 20th anniversary because that was our first vacation we took together.
And here it is, 20 years later. Are you going?
Yeah, no.
You're not going to go to St. Lucia.
We have a...
You're going to go to Sizzler?
No, we're actually going to Dylan's high school conference, parent-teacher conference
tonight.
That's
way better than St. Lucia. This is way,
That's
way
what happens.
Better.
Wendy, do you know this is your platinum anniversary?
It is.
So I get some new jewelry out of this.
Platinum right now is selling for $925.20 per ounce.
I would like 5 ounces, please.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
So are you disappointed because St. Lucia, as you said, has been a goal? That was your plan to go there? And
we only really planned it like maybe 6 months ago so that we don't like to plan ahead, as you can tell.
Just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I'm
whatever.
Sure
we'll
get
do
there
it
at some point.
We'll do it.
Yeah.
We'll go out and maybe run to White Castle after the school conference
Very
tonight.
Romantic.
It's a great
Very
anniversary.
Romantic. You'll go someplace nice, though, won't you?
Just not tonight. We'll
not
do
tonight.
It this weekend.
Yeah.
And we went out. We did an early anniversary on Friday night and Saturday night.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're milking it for the week.
Yeah.
Maybe for the whole year.
Did my check clear from the wedding?
I did want to talk to you about
could you
that.
You sit on this for 10 or 15 years, and then it ended up being 20. So I hope the check cleared.
You post-dated it to 2017. I thought that was weird.
Wedding. It was a really fun wedding.
I'm glad you could be part
of
it.
Did you guys go through pictures and stuff and just go, wow, this was 20 years ago. What happened?
I did this morning. I went through the proof book. We have the album, but then there's a proof book, too. And there was a crazy picture with Harry Tynowitz in it.
Who wasn't even invited to the wedding.
He
How did he get in there?
It. Yeah. And just some fun pictures. And I have to find, we have our wedding video, which I'm scared to watch because you're waiting for the videotape to break.
Yeah,
we have
right
to get it put on a DVD.
Yeah.
But I want to watch it tonight because there's some, it's the director's cut. There's
oh
some unedited parts.
Oh, with commentary underneath.
I hope they have me
From
arriving.
Martin Scorsese?
Yes. I hope they have me arriving like I did with a bottle of Korbel in one hand, a bottle of Miller Lite in the other,
yes,
and a smoke in my mouth. That's how I got out of
you
the limo.
You were a very non-traditional bride, I
That's
remember
how
people
I roll
saying. And we, you know, we kept it out of Sneed's column for obvious reasons. But
because I wasn't spooling pasta.
Right. Right. That's why. Well, happy anniversary
Thank
to
you.
You. Happy
and
anniversary
Jim.
To Jim and everybody who lived to tell the tale.
You're one of them.
I'm one of the few. All right, we'll take a break, and then we'll tell you about our friend Mike McNamara, who is starring in a new movie. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Well, we have a friend in the studio. His name is Mike McNamara. And, Mike, what brings you in today?
Well, thank you so much. You know, usually I'm here for the Midwest Independent Film Festival that we run up in Lincoln Park. But today I'm actually here because I'm part of a film called The Replacement that's premiering at the Chicago International Film Festival, the big boy, the 53rd annual Chicago International Film Festival. And it's this exciting sci-fi thriller, and we'll tell you all about it. I brought the producer and director in, too. We've got the director, Sean Miller, and the producer, Naz Khan, and we're here to hang out with you guys.
Sean, Naz, thank you for being here, and thank you for giving Mike work.
Yeah, really. How did he get this?
It was a charity case.
Oh,
here.
That's so nice of both of you to do this for us. Tell us a little bit about the film The Replacement, please.
Sure. So The Replacement's a sci-fi political thriller. Kind of set in a future where cloning is like kind of taken over as the new big social craze, and
it's going to happen.
It will happen. We've got Dolly the sheep already.
Yeah, right?
You know, it's just a matter of time. So, and it's set in an election night when the first clone has been elected president, and
Say clone or clown? Sorry,
clone.
Well,
might be a little.
You'll
bit
have
both.
To watch the film to see exactly
but
how that works out.
Has the film in any way, shape, or form been inspired by any real life events? Is there any parallel at all?
Well, it's funny you say that. So we filmed this like right before the election. So like when everything was kind of going crazy, nobody knew where anything was going to go. And, you know, we had an idea for a cloning movie, and like we started to set it around election night, knowing just how, you know, timely it was at the time. No one thinking it was going to go, you know, with the Donald Trump presidency. And afterwards, you know, it was just like, oh my gosh, you know, this thing, you know, has suddenly become, you know, a much more timely thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nods, your involvement in this is what exactly?
I'm the producer on the film.
Exciting.
Yeah, I try to understand Sean's vision and found locations and helped him with auditions and figured out like what props we need to show, what's the visual language we need to show so that the viewers can understand this dystopian future.
Yeah.
Even understanding like what is the concept of the technology in year 2036 when the clone president has been elected. So I worked with him, tried to make this movie on a low budget, but still make it look like it's...
Not low budget?
Yeah. It was a struggle.
That's got to be hard.
But we did it.
Oh, yeah. It looks great.
And it's a futuristic sci-fi thriller. So really those visuals, you know, we brought in our DP was three-time Emmy winner Mike Bove right here out of Chicago.
Yep.
I mean, Naz really put together a top-flight team. Our VFX, visual effects, which are critical with this sci-fi thriller, were done by Cutters in their VFX division called Flavor, top sound design in other countries. So, you know, we really put together a top-flight team. And you really have to have – you know, if it's a coffee house kind of rom-com, you have – you know, some flexibility there with production value. With this, it's got to be razor sharp. And with Blade Runner coming out and everything, people are going to dig it. They're going to have a lot of fun.
What do you play in it?
I am the president.
Oh, my
God.
I am the replacement.
Oh, nice.
And I am, you know, this humble janitor, Abe Stagson, who agrees to get cloned in order to kind of try and pay off some of his student debt. And
like kids will do anything.
I know, right? It's, you know, plasma or whatever. You know, I did plasma in college. I did a little blood plasma. we won't go there. These clones take off and wind up next thing we jump into, you know, he's still a janitor and his clones have taken over society, arts, culture. And as the film opens, the presidential election is being decided. And this janitor decides that he's not too happy with the results.
So when you ask, like, who is Mike McNamara in the film? Yeah. He's everyone.
He's everybody.
He is.
That is the best role you could ever ask for.
Well, that's why, you know, we're pretty excited about it. And it's, you know, it's for me as an actor, it's kind of, you know, put up or shut up time.
Yeah.
It's like, so it's because there's literally like,
so now we all have to go see it.
You got
to
go see it. There's three or four of me on the screen at different points, so it's pretty exciting.
My dream come true.
Now, or Mike, your worst nightmare.
Mike said he wanted separate trailers for all the characters. How do you afford something like that? It's impossible. All right, so different take themes. Us through the arc of what could happen. When you make a film like this, a short film, what's the ultimate goal for this? What are you hoping will have happen?
Well, best case scenario, you know, we can get a feature out of it or a TV series, which, you know, with a concept like this, there's a lot of different ways you can go with this.
Yeah.
So we're going the whole festival route. We're going to Austin Film Festival right after that, submitting to Slam Dance, doing Seattle, Dallas International. So
those are ones we're submitting to. Yes,
yes. But we do plan on doing the full.
But we are going to Austin Film Festival. Austin's right after weekend.
This. So in theory, somebody could see this as a short and say to you all, "Hey, we really like what we saw. Mm-hmm. How about the idea of expanding it into a 90-minute or a 2-hour movie?" Recasting it, rewriting it, and stuff like that, and you'd all be open to that, right? Why wouldn't you want that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And in fact, we actually already have like a treatment for it for a longer version of this.
Yeah. So. Put it out to John Hamm. You know, he's looking
right. So day
it's
one,
it's either John Hamm or nothing.
So you show Mike the exit from day one. As soon as this gets sold, you say to Mike, "Thanks for your participation, but
that's right.
But here's the door. Is interested.
Very cute. Very cute. Hey, I will gladly step aside for that man."
A friend of mine, Greg Liana, did that years ago with Meet the Parents. He made a short version of Meet the Parents, and then a larger movie company saw it and said, "We think we have an idea to make this into a feature," and sold the rights, and it did really well for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this isn't your first project together as husband and wife, is it?
No. So we met on a film about 9 years ago. Before that, individually, both of us had enough experience just being assistant directors or line producers on other projects. Once we met, anytime anyone would call us for a favor or to come work on a set, they'd get two people.
Package deal.
It was always a package deal. We always like work together really in lockstep. So I think the one benefit of having a husband and wife is that there is no communication gap.
Yeah.
Zero.
But it's has there ever been a time, Naz, where the two of you have disagreed about something into the film? It's never happened, I'm sure, right?
That's all the time.
I bet Naz wins that one.
Yeah. All the time. But I'm going to say that if we're still together, that really means that we really like listen to each other and value each other's opinion.
Yeah.
And we only make decisions that are best for the project. Doesn't matter if it's our project. Doesn't matter if it's another person's project. It has to be for the project. That's what we learned in film school. It's all about the movie.
Oh, yeah. You leave your ego at the door.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Aren't they a great team?
Yeah, I think so.
I was just pleased to be a part of the team and watch them work together and just the crew they put together for this film. And we shot 5 straight days overnight shoots.
Yeah.
So you start at 6 p.m., you go to 6 a.m. And there were a lot of people on our crew that then went to their other job.
Oh,
I went home and passed out hard.
Yep.
But, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
That's tough.
It's interesting, and this is a sci-fi thriller, some drama, some action, some rumor, a little romance. You know, your mind starts to fray, on that third or fourth day. It's 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And that kind of lends itself to the film because it's this kind of twisted reality.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy to put together a A-class team. It really isn't. With such a low budget, it really had a lot to do with the idea that Sean put together. People were willing to work for a lower amount just because they believed in that idea. We couldn't have gotten where we were if people didn't believe in it.
Yeah.
Or volunteered. We had a lot of people just came out to want to be a part of it.
Yeah. Talk about the process of making the film here in Chicago. How does it differ from doing a movie? You know, New York and Los Angeles always get the reputation because they get so much work. It's still I hate to say it, but almost a new game to Chicago, isn't it?
We have a lot of advantages here in Chicago. You go out to L.A. or something and, you want to shoot in the coffee shop, they pull out the rate chart and they're like,
really?
In the coffee shop, this is how much it costs. But people, I think, in Chicago are still like, they're excited about making movies and being a part of movies. So, and you've got that great Midwest work ethic out here. A lot of great people who, they work on all these series, movies come in town to shoot on location here in Chicago, so you have a really great, a lot of experience with the people here.
Yeah.
And filming in Chicago, we didn't use green screen in this movie. It's a sci-fi movie, but we just found locations that had that look, that feel of like being, 10 minutes into the future and looking just a little bit off. So we just shot it in such a way where, it has that feel. And you watch the movie and everything looks real because we shot on real locations.
We shot on State Street where all those lights are from another
right
studio.
Of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
State and Lake. And we did some extensions behind the character just to make it look a little more futuristic. Yeah. And there were places over there, like the Potbelly's there. It was like, hey, we're going to buy some lunch from here and we're going to use your bathroom. Is that okay? Oh, yeah, sure. We love this.
They didn't have to check with corporate. They just said, go for it.
No.
Oh, good.
Like,
I love that.
We'll give you this area. It's like Chicago is awesome because of that.
Yeah.
Mike, do you have any cool outfits since this is based in the future? Are you wearing anything silver and metallic or something?
I know, wouldn't that be? That would be hilarious. And I think I can happily say no, I don't. You know, it's really, that would be hilarious. Me in some kind of silvery, glittery spandex just kind of gliding along from the future.
When we were kids, anytime they showed you a movie in the future, everybody wore silver.
Everyone was in silver.
And Jim Peterick's the only one to continue wearing.
It's the technology that's advanced, and you'll see that when you see the film. But in terms of what people are wearing and how they're operating, it's a little bit advanced, but you know it's accessible.
It's not very,
very
much different.
Accessible. No, for sure. But the technology, you'll definitely feel like you're in the future.
Did you, as you were making the film, were there any major changes that were in the original script that all of a sudden you realized, well, this is just, we can't do this. We wish we could, but we can't. Anything major come up?
You know, this whole script has gone through like a couple of different evolutions. Like originally, this was a soldier movie with clone soldiers and all sorts of stuff. And Nas was like, "Honey, we can't do that."
Yeah. I was like, "Let's make a movie that we can afford to make."
Yeah. So we were like, "Okay, well, how would you get to this type of world where you know, like, where cloning became a mainstream thing?" And we were like, "Okay, let's think of like you know, social movements and stuff where." Clones are the new it thing that people are you know fighting for. Like there's this whole logo in the movie. Clones are people too.
Yeah,
and this is kind of like what it's people. He's running his election campaign on. So we kind of based it around that, and it just kind of like went from there.
Yeah, just trying to make it relative to the people so that people could understand and kind of see. Like, I'm watching this. This can happen.
Yeah, this can really happen. Yeah.
It's called The Replacement. How can we see it? Where can we see it?
You can see it today. This is your last chance to see it, Chicago, on the big screen at AMC River East at the Chicago International Film Festival. Just go to chicagofilmfestival.com. There are very few tickets remaining, but there are some tickets, and it starts at 5:45. It's part of the City and State Shorts program, so these are all Chicago and Illinois-made shorts. A lot of great films in this lineup, and we'll see at AMC River East at 5:45.
How big is your head going to get when this is a huge hit? Huge? Will it get really big?
It's already a pretty, you know, it's like anatomically, it's a big head, so I don't think it really has room to go, but it's terrifying seeing one of yourself on the screen. It's horrifying seeing five of yourself.
You love it.
It's pretty fun.
Excellent.
Congrats.
Guys, thanks all for coming up, and we wish you guys nothing but the best for the film.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
It is The Replacement, and it's showing today at 5:45. Go see it at the River East 21, the AMC River East 21. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Wendy and I are headed to the stream. Go to WGNradio.com and hook up with us there. We would love to talk to you for another hour.
We're bonus
hour.
Hookup?
Yeah, there's going to be a hookup, Wendy. A big hookup.